To me, the horror genre is not the genre of non-denial. It's about admitting that there is evil in the world, and recognizing that there is evil within us, and that we're not in control, and that the thing we are afraid of must be confronted in order for us to relinquish that fear. Scott Derrickson.
The following presentation is a production of 63 Audio and the Narada Radio Company, a proud member of the Mutual Audio Network.
Do you dare go down into the cellar? Welcome to the Cellar, Miniseries 4. Starring the Narada Radio Company. And hosted by Cadavra Quivery.
Again, fiends. Welcome back to my beautiful cellar. You've caught me right at the tail end of practicing my new hobby. I want you to meet little Zombina, my ventriloquist dummy. Say hello to our friend Zombina.
Great.
Oh, I'm afraid I'm still having trouble speaking without moving my lips. So any word that normally starts with a B have been sounding like they start with a G.
Great.
You know, perhaps I could take advantage of this difficulty and say that Zombina is a vegetarian zombie.
Oh.
Whoops. Well, she doesn't like that idea. Well, enough of that for now. I know you didn't come down here to have your grains messily devoured, eh? You came for a story, and I happen to have a particularly putrescent one for you here in my great big book. Ah, yes. here it is. So, tonight's story takes place in Africa, in Algeria to be exact, and involves a garrison of the French Foreign Legion, just a few years before the start of World War II. Our storyteller is a legionnaire named Crane. Let's listen in, shall we?
There.
Oh, what is it this time?
They would spring that on us. Just when we're in a hole about Machar.
A German, eh?
Yeah. I'll take it over to the lieutenant. I stepped out of the radio room and into the deserted quadrangle, where everything baked in the mid-afternoon sun and suffered under the heavy, hot lifelessness of the place. On the wall, two guards stood out against the African sky. In the shade of the doorway, a native slept. There was no other sign of life. 50 men had marched from here, Fort Sirde, to the garrison at Nechar 2 days before. The other half was finding relief from the heat in sleep.
What is it?
Special dispatch, sir.
Entree. Ah, Crane, you caught me dosing. Let's see what you've got, eh?
Yes, sir.
Well, urgent. Government of France, acting on advice from Germany, asks all commanders of Algerian posts to watch for and arrest German scientist Dr. Otto Pretvek, who escaped from sanitarium with important documents, believed heading for Algeria, described as tall, thin man, sunken cheeks, livid scar on left side of face, black eyes, gray hair. We won't have to worry much about this. Even a lunatic wouldn't hide in a godforsaken hole like this. Now, what about Meshar? Still no contact?
Nothing, sir.
Damn strange business. Those fellows should have been there a long while ago. Damned strange indeed.
Any orders, sir?
Stick to the wire, Crane. We can't do anything else.
I left the building thinking about the trouble that had started when news came from Mechar about a strange band of unidentified men. Whether they were marauders, gypsies, Tuaregs, no one knew exactly, who were occupying an old and deserted post near Fort Mechar, the last outpost. Before Lieutenant Doblier at Mechar could send out an investigating party, his post had been surprised by a formidable army of men and, after a futile battle on the part of the legionnaires, had been taken. Dispatches to us here at Sirde had ceased in the middle of the sentence announcing Mehar's fall. Orders had come from headquarters to dispatch 50 men at once, and at the same time came word that more men were being sent to us from adjoining posts. That was 2 days ago, with no word reaching us from Mechar, nor any word nor sign that the 50 men had reached that post.
It's pretty much a consensus between myself and the men remaining that my friend Doblier was deceived as to the number of men at the deserted posts, for only a great number could have destroyed the garrison of Mechar. After all, since it's the last outpost, it has many more men than we have here at Sirde.
So I waited in vain at the telegraph, occasionally tapping out the code call for Mechar. M-E-C. Silence was my only answer. Ah, hell. Wake me if something happens.
Okay. Crane, wake up!
What?
Gaspar has come back.
Gaspari? Who else?
He's alone, stumbling across the desert as if he were wounded. I saw him from a distance. He dropped from exhaustion just shy of the gates.
Get him to bed. No, wait. I'll take him in. You go for Lieutenant Pregor.
Okay.
I carried the unconscious Gaspari into the building and lowered him carefully to a cot. Some brandy was nearby, and I forced some through his parched lips. In a few moments, his breathing had eased up. I was sitting next to the cot watching Gaspari's face when Lieutenant Pregor entered.
Has he said anything?
No. He's just now opened his eyes. I'll get him some water. Hello, Gaspari. Take some of this. Not too much now.
Gaspari! Talk to me!
Dio. One of them. One of them had to be by the neck.
It didn't take long for Gaspari to pull himself together. Lieutenant Pregur held back his impatience. Gaspari eventually pulled himself up into a sitting position and began to talk.
Lieutenant, I was one of the 50 you sent to Michar. It took us only 11 hours to march, therefore it is not a great distance. The post seemed to be deserted. Yet the gates were locked from the inside. We broke in after a while and I waited for something to happen, but nothing did. Inside, everything was quiet and deserted. But then, as soon as we were all well inside, the firing began. From all sides, the doors, the windows, and on the roofs, where they had been concealed. We answered their fire, but we didn't have a chance against an army like that.
Like what?
That army, Dio. It was no army. We fired and fired, but not one of them fell. They were dead already. Some of them were skeletons, half-rotted corpses, and Dio. Some were the men from Michar, dead men fighting.
Seems like the sun's got him, Crane. He sounded all right up to then.
Yes, sir. Could be.
Look here, Gaspari. Forget that. We sent 50 good men to Mishor. They haven't come back, and we haven't had a word from them. What happened? You must know. Tell me!
I have told you. Sir, they are dead. They were killed by those dead things at Mechar. I alone escaped.
You're delirious. Tell me.
I'm telling you, sir. They were killed by dead men and one who was not dead at all. Dean, the old man, who was like a ghost. He directed their movements from the safety of the watchtower. But all the others were dead, I tell you. Dead. And yet, even though they were dead, they moved.
What happened to our men, Gaspari?
They're dead in Michar. Or perhaps... perhaps they too are alive like those others.
He's obviously mad, sir, but that doesn't explain his presence. Why is he here? He came on foot, alone, across the sand.
Sange de Dieu! You don't put any faith in his tale, do you, Crane?
No, sir. But I don't understand his condition. He got a shock somewhere, because there's something more than imagination behind that story he's telling.
My neck. Bones. Bones around my neck. Rotted flesh.
Look after him, Crane. And keep trying to raise Mishar.
Yes, sir. What the hell? Hey, what is it? What's going on?
Another coming across the sand wearing the uniform from Mishar. Lieutenant, there's a guy coming across the sand.
I heard you. I'm going up to look from the wall.
I'll come with you, sir. From the small turret at the southwest corner, Trigger scanned the desert through his binoculars. I looked out with my naked eye, and at first saw nothing but an endless blue sky. Then my eyes focused properly, and I saw the oncoming man. A small figure, moving slowly but steadily across the sand.
I don't recognize him. His cap is hiding his face. Still, I'm sure he's one of our men. Take a look.
Thank you, sir.
Olé! Right out to meet him.
Oui, mon lieutenant.
Spot that walk.
Yes, sir. Funny, sir. The lieutenant's glasses brought the figure closer. It was a white man in a private's uniform. But what instantly caught my eye was the ease with which the soldier was moving. He came in on a straight line across the sands, heading obviously for the Sur des Gates, never hesitating, never stumbling, as a man overcome by exhaustion might. Just coming along at a steady, slow, almost mechanical pace.
I don't like it. Not one bit. But he seems to be one of our men.
Maybe we can learn something from this one, sir. What the hell?
Hey, he's got a gun.
He's shooting at Olé.
Is he hit?
He's turning.
Look out.
Riding back.
Hey, stop. Don't shoot.
Here he comes. He's in.
Help him down.
Shut the gates quick.
Ah! It's one of the dead ones. We are lost if we get seen.
Wait.
Gaspari, what are you doing out of bed?
Olé, are you all right?
Something strange. He's not one of us.
You men, take care of Olé. Now what the... Devil, Gaspari.
Lieutenant, sir, it is a dead man. He'll kill all of us, just as he was killed. We can't kill him. He's dead already. Dio, shut the gates before it's too late.
There was sheer terror in Gaspari's voice, in his words, and from his haunted eyes. The man from Mechar was less than 100 feet from the gate now, but he hadn't once looked up to see what lay ahead of him. There was menace in the way he held his weapon.
Hide, all of you. Leave the gates wide. Some of you crouch close to the wall. Some get on top and fall on him when he comes in. We'll take him alive. Now, move.
The men scrambled to obey, and in a few moments silence had fallen. All of the men were concealed, the lieutenant and I close to the gate in order to be among the first to attack. The desert sand sounded under the footsteps, and the man from Mechar came through the open gate.
Now!
At that command, three legionnaires launched themselves from the top of the wall onto the intruder, while at the same moment, men rushed in on him from all directions. The weapon he carried sounded only once. Then it was wrenched from his grasp, and he lay prone, unmoving, with his kepi torn from his head.
What is it?
Mon Dieu, don't like this.
I ain't never seen anything like it.
What's going on
have
here?
You ever seen anything like this? I never had. Oh, got to cross myself.
Blimey, look at
him. I'm going to see the chaplain about this.
He ain't hardly there no more.
The men began to back away from the intruder, while Prigur and I pressed forward and saw what they had seen.
Mon Dieu! His face! It's not a face!
The lieutenant spoke the truth. The face below the soldier's kepi was half-exposed bone, half-greenly rotting flesh. The odor of decay that rose from it was overpowering. This thing had been shot through the head a long time ago.
take it away. Tie it up and put it someplace. Oh, bury it.
Oui, monsieur.
Aye, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
Come along, Crane. Gaspari, come with us.
Lieutenant Prigur moved to where the Italian was leaning weakly against the wall, shuddering at the memory this foul invasion had brought to fresh life. He took Gaspari gently by the arm.
Come, Gaspari.
Si, tenente.
All right. I'll grant you that story, Gaspari. Don't ask me what I think about it. I've got nothing to say in that regard. But I want to ask you something. Take a look at this dispatch, Gaspari. Does anything sound familiar to you?
Oh, Dio, si! Tall, thin man, sunken cheeks, livid scar on face, a gray hair. It's the man who directs those dead ones.
Get that, Crane. Wire headquarters at once for detailed information on Pretvec and his documents.
A response came 2 hours later, but it wasn't what he'd been hoping to see. HQ is pretty vague, sir. Here.
Pretvec, dangerous lunatic who believes in certain formulae concerning reanimation of corpses. Escaped sanitarium and made for coast, believed in Algeria. German government reluctant to relay more. Surete believes Pretvec is using something developed in German laboratories. Take this man, dead or alive. Look here, reinforcements are due here almost any hour now, but we're not going to wait. 40 of us march on Mishar tonight.
Tenente, sir, those men go to something worse than death.
Leave that to me, Gaspari. I'll get them there and I'll lead most of them back here alive unless something goes seriously wrong. But I don't think it will. Meanwhile, you keep a tight mouth about what you've told us. The men know that something's hitched up against them and they're on edge. You, Crane, let Ellery take the telegraph. I've got a special use for you. But before you get ready, wire headquarters for 3 planes. We'll bomb Mishar if necessary.
But, sir, why sacrifice the men?
There'll be little sacrifice. We'll fake an attack. As long as I'm not entirely convinced of what's going on at Mishar, I'm not taking chances either way. We'll lead them to attack us and then retreat. One of us will have to get into the post. We'll have to fake death. And that may mean death. I don't know. But that's our only way of finding out what's going on in there, and we'll lose the least men that way.
Yes, sir.
I pick you for that, Crane.
Very well, sir.
You know what it means?
Yes, sir.
All right. You're the man for the job. Granting Gaspari's story, your danger is twofold. This lunatic, Pretvec, may discover that you're not really dead and may have you killed. Plus, you may be trapped in the post when the bombing begins, if it becomes necessary to bomb. All right. Get ready. Send that wire for planes. I'll let the men know. Layman will be in charge until I come back. If I do.
The sun was rising over the rim of the desert when our small troop of 40 men sighted Mishar. I marched together with Lieutenant Prigur to the side of the formation.
And in case you don't come back,
Instructions for disposal of my property are in my quarters.
Oui. Here, take this.
Eh? Oh. Is this?
Yes, it's blood. Drawn before we left. When the time comes, spill it over your uniform and slit the cloth to resemble a bullet hole. Take no more chance than you have to. All right, men. Company, halt! Stand easy, but stay in formation. Great. Give me the glasses. Oui. Ah, there he is.
Pretfeg, sir?
The very man. He's standing on the ramparts of the post, but keeping out of range. Odd-looking devil. I can make out his scar from here. All right, men. Break file and spread out. Remember what I told you earlier. Let's get the advance team out. Go!
We were about 100 feet from the walls of Makar when...
Fire!
Pretfeg disappeared from the wall, and other figures took their place, carelessly exposing themselves to our fire. Immediately, a volley of lead poured down on us, and then a second one. But that was all. For at once, Pregur called...
Retreat!
The men expected that, and some had taken flight at the first volley in accordance with Pregur's previous instructions. I fell at the first volley, thinking how ironic it would be if I had actually been shot and killed. 5 others fell with me, but I was the only one playing possum. In just a few moments, I had the little vial the lieutenant had given me, uncorked, and the blood soaking into my shirt front, which I'd cut a slit into earlier. Then I buried the vial deep in the sand. Pregur and the legionnaires were soon gone, and I lay there unmoving, breathing as shallowly as possible. What would happen now? It seemed as if hours were passing as I lay there amongst my dead comrades. The sun's heat was almost unbearable. And then I heard some distant movement. The gates to Fort Makar were swinging open. The figure that came forth had to be Dr. Pretvik. I had one eye open as a slit, unblinking, but I could see him. He smiled at the sight of the dead men, a smile of great pleasure. Against my better judgment, I continued to watch the German as he bent over the first corpse, a revolver in his hand.
Take it, my son, drink it up. It is bitter, but you cannot taste it. Now, let us see what happens.
I had watched Pretvik take a bottle from his pocket and force some kind of liquid into the dead man's mouth. Then the German stood, watching the corpse intently for a few moments, not moving away until he had seen a faint, horrible movement from the dead man. It was impossible. I didn't see what had just happened. Or it hadn't happened. But it had, and I did. I struggled to remain motionless as I watched Pretvig move on to the second man. And I saw the man move on his own. He wasn't yet dead. Did this mean the first man might not have been dead either? But no. Any doubts I might have had about that were suddenly dispelled when... I had to bite my tongue to keep from crying out in fury, in horror. The German had looked at the man, saw that he presented no danger to him, and then callously put a bullet in the soldier's head. Then the bottle again, and liquid forced down the new corpse's throat.
Take it, young man. Drink it. It is bitter, but who is to complain? Now, we see what happens. Yeah.
The German let go of me, and I let my head fall back onto the sand. My only thought was that I had succeeded in fooling him, for the doctor had noticed nothing amiss. I let the vile-tasting liquid drool out of my mouth and soak into the sand. Pretvig moved away from me and stood among the dead. He raised his arms to waist height, as if encouraging us to come in and embrace him. His eyes took on a hypnotic quality as he said,
"Come now, my children. Rise. Won't follow me."
There was still a skeptical part of me that wanted to laugh at this gesture, these words. But this was immediately wiped away by terror, as one by one, the dead began to move. I was the last to rise. As I stumbled to my feet, I tried to mimic the actions of the others. They now stood at eerie attention, their dead faces turned without expression toward the doctor, whose medicine and mental magic had brought their bodies back to life. I felt deep within me a wish that the bombing planes might already be within range. "Let them come," I shrieked in my mind. But there was no sound in the air but the wind.
"Come, my children. Follow me to the fortress."
I was struck by an impulse to shoot the German as he walked ahead of me. But the conviction that I must get inside Mechar, as Pregur had ordered, to verify Gaspari's story, smothered that idea. My sidearm was still in its holster, and my hand itched for the feel of it. No. My whole being craved the satisfaction of shooting down this inhuman monster who had such terrible power over the dead. Part of me was certain that I had enough verification. Gaspari's story was certainly true, wasn't it? Hadn't I already seen the dead rise again? But another part of me called it insane that Pretvig had this control over dead flesh. Out of the corner of my eye, I recognized the man marching alongside me. It was Franz Klast, an Austrian I knew as a good soldier, a good man. I'd seen Klast fall in that first volley of gunfire from the Mechar walls. Was I deluding myself? Was I dreaming that Klast and the others had died, since he was here, walking at my side? "Klast! Klast, for God's sake, talk to me!" Klast said nothing. and I recklessly turned my face to him and immediately wished I hadn't. For in my comrade's temple was a gaping bullet hole. Clast's wound seemed to stare at me, to mock me, and it removed the final doubt from my mind. On the heels of that mental cleansing came a stark idea, a vision of the future. This madman, Dr. Pretvin, controlling thousands upon thousands of dead men, they could ultimately sweep over the face of the earth. For hadn't they conquered death? Weren't they, in themselves, death? The German could send his forces anywhere, and they could hold every fort, every outpost, every great city controlled by this mad, cancerous brain. Oh, what was the word? Telepathy? Mental telepathy? It was all too hard for my soldier's brain. Smarter men than I would be able to explain it. All I knew, the main idea that kept repeating in my mind, was that Pretwig must die. No matter the cost, he must die. Now we were inside the gates of Makar, and I stood alone, trapped with a madman and an army of corpses. My companions had ceased to move. They stopped in their tracks, their bodies sagging. Had Pretvig removed his mental directing force? I shut my eyes for a moment so I didn't have to look at the death around me, and strained my ears for some sign of motors humming in the sky. But there was nothing. Cautiously, I looked around me. There were more dead inside besides the five men who had come in with me. Half-decayed bodies and the skeletal remains of Tuaregs whose bodies had lain exposed in the sun. They stood mute along the walls. They sat in doorways or on the sweltering sand or on the ramparts. Suddenly, Pretvig, who had disappeared once he'd entered the gates, now emerged from a doorway and addressed us.
Tomorrow, my children, we will take Fort Sudez. There will be enough of us after that to move down the line upon post after post. This will be our country then. And afterward, I dream of what lies before us.
Just a single gunshot, and this dream of his would be defeated. All I had to do was... But no. No. I had to wait for the right chance before I could draw my sidearm. The German was now scanning the faces of the dead men, and for a long moment he seemed to linger on mine. Inwardly, I panicked. Had Pretwig seen my reckless movements of a few moments ago? Or had he perhaps, and this was far more plausible, had he sensed the mental force of a living mind? This thought froze me with fear, for surely his perceptive mind had felt my hate flowing toward him. But after another moment, the doctor turned and began to walk away. This now was my chance. I whipped my revolver out of my holster. But in that same moment, perhaps galvanized into action by Pretwig's mental command, the dead men piled on top of me. I fired off one shot in Pretwig's direction, but it missed the German by several meters, and the corpses attacked. The dead of Makar and Surdeg grappled with me, struggling clumsily for my weapon, and more were joining them from all sides. I felt their rotting arms wrapped around me, felt their bony fingers at my neck. Those who were armed fired upon me. Pain seared my leg and shoulder, and I went down under a nauseating mass of dead things. Through the mass, I glimpsed the German, smiling sardonically in my direction. Armed with his own revolver and ready to fire upon me should I break free of the dead men. But I didn't care about that. With a pain-racking effort, I shifted under the writhing mass of undead, aimed wildly, and fired. The struggle ebbed away and died. I was nauseated by the touch of dead flesh. But I worked my way out of the sea of corpses and looked around me. Bodies fell from the walls, sagged down to the sand, collapsed like empty sacks. And then, a little ways off, I saw Dr. Pretwig, against the wall of a building, sag gently, and slide downward to the sand. My wounds were flaming with pain. I moved about unsteadily, but I had to make sure. Yes, all of the dead were dead again. The power of reanimating them had passed with Pretvig's death. I pray it shall never come again. Abruptly, the sound of racing planes assaulted my ears. It didn't mean anything to me at first, so befuddled was my mind after the onslaught of the dead. But then it came to me, the realization that I must escape the fort before the planes drop their cargo of bombs. I looked toward the gates. Some undead sentry had barred them after we entered, and with my wounds, there was no way I could open them alone. I was still in a panic, confused and clouded by the recent memory of my near death. And then my mind cleared. The flag! The flag of the Foreign Legion! If I could raise it in time, I could save my own life. They must know I was here. Lieutenant Pregur had doubtless given them directions. I ran as best as I could toward the central building, forgetting the pain in my leg, and emerged on the roof to see the planes almost directly above, circling uncertainly about. I glanced quickly around and spied the flag crumpled carelessly in a corner. I ran over, gathered it in my arms, ran up to the highest wall, and let the flag stream out behind me as I ran along the rampart. For a moment, I had a sickening conviction that machine gun fire would knock me down from the wall. But the leading plane banked and veered away. And the other followed. They had seen me. They'd understood. Movement on the ground caused me to draw my eyes away from the disappearing aircraft, and I recognized my comrades from Surde, coming across the dunes beyond the gate. For a moment, I just stood there, trying to comprehend it all. But then, blackness overtook me, and I fell.
Hello, Crane. Back at your post already, eh? Good man. Here, send this off to headquarters.
Yes, sir. Garrison at Makar was wiped out by surprise attack of Tuareg. Stop. Held fort and wiped out 54 of our men. Stop. Surprise attack by remainder of our men yesterday took Makar. Stop. Tuaregs fled. Stop. Dr. Otto Pretweg, about whom wire received 2 days ago, was killed in action at Makar. Stop. He had joined and was leading Tuareg attack. Stop. Relay to German authorities.
Something, Crane?
No, sir. Yes, sir. Tuaregs, sir?
You remember how I took Gaspari's story at first, don't you? Can you imagine, Crane, how they'd take it at headquarters? Just send it off as written. There's a good chap.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and by the way, Crane, you may depend upon promotion.
That's very good, Zombina. Oh, hello. You're back, I see. I have been working so hard on this trick of talking without moving my lips. And now, well, instead of B's sounding like G's, they sound like D's. But I am assured this is an improvement. Say something nice to the people, Zombina.
Drains.
What do you think, fiends? Oh, perhaps now my sweet little Zombina could be an undead plumber, eh? Got something evil clogging your pipes? Call for little Zombina.
Drains.
Oh. Our story was called Death Holds the Post, and was episode 3 of The Cellar's 4th miniseries. It was adapted for audio by Pete Lutz from a 1936 short story by August W. Derleth and Mark Shorer. So, until next time, fiends, this is your dear departed cadaver, reminding you, don't take candy from stranglers.
The Cellar is produced and directed by Pete Lutz. The theme was composed and performed by Tom Rory Parsons. Our cast consisted of the following players: Mark Kalita as Crane, Nick Womack as the Radio Man, Les Marsden as Lieutenant Pregur, Tony Semchuk as Gaspari, Andy Hartson-Bowyer as Owlet, and Jason D. Johnson as Dr. Pretweg. Additional characters were played by Pete Lutz. Cadavera Quivery is played by Angela Young. Additional music was by Dr. Ross Bernhardt. This is Trevor Ryan speaking. The Cellar is a 63 audio production, mixed and mastered in Corpus Christi, Texas. Join us next time when Cadavera takes you to the Hollywood of the 1930s, where a studio publicity man gets caught up in black magic and the worship of Satan. That's Return to the Sabbath, next time in The Cellar.
Yeah, 63 audio.
This